Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddy is here, Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Hey, Chris. Chris and I like to just talk food generally. We talk about this constantly with each other, right, Chris?
And there's so many things to talk about now.
I know. I like to grill fruit when we start to get into this season. Do you?
Totally. Peaches are my favorite. Have you ever grilled a peach?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Do you put anything? Do you put butter on them, or do you put oil, or do you just do straight on the grill?
You know what? I came up with a different way of doing it. And what I do is I take my grill, preheat it, right?
Yeah.
And then I take a piece of aluminum foil, put it on the grill, and then I take my spray bottle. And I have one of those spray bottles you can put your own olive oil in.
Yeah.
And I spray that, and then I put the peaches or whatever fruit it is on top of the aluminum foil. And the grill grates still get hot enough to where it actually leaves marks, and it never sticks.
Wow.
It really does work. It's great for fish, too.
That is so clever.
So I have the only nonstick grill in the neighborhood.
That is fantastic.
When I go over to the neighbors for grilling now, I bring tinfoil.
Okay, so you take a piece of tinfoil, you spray it with olive oil.
Yeah. And then preheat your grill.
Or oil.
Yeah, preheat the grill.
Of course, the grill's been preheated. Yeah. And then you put the foil down on the preheated grill.
Yeah, and let it sit there for a minute
or so. Then the foil's already got the oil on it.
Yeah.
And you just take your half of a peach and sit it right on there. And the grill is so hot that it makes the marks.
Grill marks. And you can even do peach slices. And you can even do grilled strawberries with vanilla ice cream. Because you can just take the same kind of thing, and I cut the strawberries in half, and I put them right on the grill.
A grilled strawberry shortcake.
Yeah.
Never thought of it.
Yeah, and if you close the lid, it gets a little smoky.
Because it would concentrate the flavor of the strawberry. Somebody has got to do this. A grilled strawberry shortcake.
Yeah.
All right, my favorite fruit to put on the grill is pineapple.
Oh, sure.
Would you say do it the same way as you do with the foil?
I think pineapple is one of the fruits you don't have to. Pineapple is one of the fruits that I never have trouble with, so I wouldn't have to do it. Peaches sometimes stick?
I just put the slices of pineapple straight on the
Nothing
grill.
Nothing on it, no oil or anything.
Sometimes I put butter on it.
Ooh.
I just brush a little bit of butter on it.
It gets caramelized.
Because it gets that caramelized thing. And, so delicious. You can do anything with it. I mean, people just love, when they come over, they just love to eat it plain.
Yeah.
But you can put ice cream on it. You can put it on pound cake and with ice cream. You can put whipped cream on it.
You can do it savory, couldn't you?
Yeah. Once I put down a piece of pound cake.
Yeah.
Then I put the grilled pineapple.
Okay.
Then I put just a little dollop of whipped cream.
Okay.
And then on the top, I crushed some macadamia nuts.
Ooh.
So it was a very kind of Hawaiian.
And isn't that an easy dessert, better than, you know, spending all that time measuring and baking and, right?
Yeah.
You can buy a simple pound cake and, right, grill some fresh pineapple and you have dessert.
So we can grill strawberries.
Yep.
We can grill pineapple. We can grill peaches. You can grill plums.
Yep.
Watermelon. You can absolutely grill watermelon. What am I forgetting?
You can grill apples and pears, too, once those come along.
Yeah.
So you really can grill just about any fruit.
Okay.
How about figs?
Oh.
That's a fruit.
I love to wrap figs in prosciutto.
Ooh.
I do this not on the grill, though, because
I
don't control it quite as easily on the grill. So I wrap the fig in prosciutto. Put a little bit of oil in the pan, put a little toothpick through to hold it all together, and then I fry the prosciutto-wrapped fig
so
the outside of the prosciutto gets crunchy, flip it over, do the other side, and then just put it on people's plates. If you put 3 or 4 of those on a plate, believe it or not, with the fig melty inside, it is an entree.
That's heaven.
It's so summery.
And again, simple, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what we've got to get away from, all these complex dishes and stuff, and just wrap a fig in a little slice of prosciutto and pan fry it.
How about ice cream? Do you make your own ice cream at home?
Actually.
But this is funny because a lot of us have the modern ice cream
makers.
Yeah,
I had one.
Yeah, and I gave it up.
I gave it away. I gave it away as a present that I didn't want anymore because my friend Lou showed me at his house once. And again, he has all the gadgets. So he was like, come over for dinner and we're gonna make ice cream at the end. And I'm like, cool. So he brings out from the freezer the thing and then he has the hand crank. I'm like, you're kidding. You don't have an electric
one. The one you put the salt in.
Yeah. And then with the hand crank on it. And I'm like, you're kidding, right? And he's like, what? He goes, you don't have an electric ice cream maker? Come on. Everyone has electric. He goes, no, you have to try it this way. And he doesn't aerate it that much. So in other words, he puts the ice cream mixture in it and he just gives it a spin and then he lets it sit. And then he goes back to it and spins backwards one time and lets it sit. And he keeps doing this, probably taking about a 30-second to 45-second break in between turning it. So it gets this to be this really dense ice cream.
Wow.
So it's not heavily aerated.
Does he reverse the direction
each time? Each time he reverses direction, he just sort of lets it freeze. I think it's because it scrapes from the outside. It scrapes from, you know, where it's frozen to the thing because it actually sticks on the
amazing.
And you got to try it. If you can dig out one of those old hand crank ones.
So you put the salt. You can get them at any tag sale.
Sure, sure. You put the salt and ice in it. And he refrigerates. And he does still freeze the container that it goes in. He puts that in his freezer. And then he puts the ice around it.
And he puts his ice cream mixture in.
Yeah.
And then he cranks it once or twice around and stops.
30 to 45 second break.
Then he goes the other direction
way.
Once.
Yep, and then stops.
And stops. And he does this for how long?
It only takes about 15 minutes.
And
with those breaks, but you're not going like, you're not working hard. You're just every once in a while. And we're talking. We did it. He left it right there near the dining room table. So we were talking and stuff. And he goes, hold on. And he'd make a turn. And then towards the end, he'd give one or two turns, you know, as it sort of incorporated in. And I kept looking at it. He's like, just wait. It's going to be really good.
Is this Lueckis?
Yeah,
right?
This is Lueckis. It makes the most intense, dense. And he did a vanilla, he did a peach, and I've been over to his house many times now.
That is the most amazing story.
And you eat it right out of he doesn't even take it out of the thing. You just eat it. You just take that thing, you put it on the table, and everyone scoops it from there.
Heaven. I'm Faith Middleton with Chris Prosperi. This is the Food Schmooze Party. It is cookbook time, so in our next segment, you're going to hear about some of the best cookbooks that we can find. Right now, we're talking anything and everything. I wish I could remember. There was a recipe. I was looking around for how would you make ice cream if you didn't have any kind of tool, you know, any kind of ice cream maker, whether it was the crank or the plug-in. And there was this recipe where you do it in a container and you
a can, right?
No. Put it in, you know, like just any kind of container with cream and this and that. And it was like an instant ice cream. You didn't even need to have all this stuff and freeze it.
Yeah.
And this is frustrating for me to bring this up on the show.
You just can't find the recipe.
I know.
but maybe that's something we need to research.
I think we have to Google that, don't you?
Yeah, totally. So you're talking about just making ice cream in a container where you don't need all the fancy tools and freeze it,
you
maybe
don't
need just
any
mix
tools
it.
You mix it up a little bit.
We're going to look for this.
Okay.
This is a good one. We're going to look for this.
We are. And anybody else can do this too. Just ice cream without an ice cream maker. That's what I would Google. You know, you'll probably find it before we do.
I remember one from a cookbook author you had on that had one that was called Kick the Can Ice Cream. And they did it in some kind of thing where
It's a ball.
It's a ball, right? And they actually put the ice cream in there. Yeah. They put the ice in
and
the salt. And the kids kick it around the backyard for 20 minutes or so.
You can buy these. and they're plastic.
Okay.
And you put the stuff in, the salt and everything. And the kids throw it back and forth mostly.
Okay. Yeah.
Or they can kick it on the ground.
Yeah.
But the tossing of it is what makes the ice cream. It's so much fun for the kids. So you can look for that.
All right, I want one of those. I totally forgot about it until you mentioned making it without fancy tools, but I want one of those.
You know, you can do butter with kids
or
with grown-ups by putting either stones or marbles that you wash so that they're food safe.
Okay.
And cream.
Yeah.
In a jar.
Okay.
With a lid screwed on.
Yeah, I'm confused, but
and
go ahead.
And you shake the jar, and you get a kids in a circle, and you pass it around.
Really?
Shake.
Yeah.
Pass it to the next kid. So everybody gets a turn. You keep going around and around and around the circle. and the heavy cream eventually with the marbles inside,
yeah.
It becomes butter.
It turns it into
and then
turns
you
it
put
into
it
butter.
On bread or muffins with the
sure.
kids, and they think it's the most exciting thing in the whole
we
world.
We could have a kids-themed like birthday party, starting off with making like some cinnamon butter toast and then ending yeah. with ice cream.
Well, isn't it true that when kids help make something or pick the vegetables or plant the vegetables— once they get involved, and a lot of schools that have been working on this, when they're involved, they love the food.
I tell that to everyone. People always ask me, like, I do cooking classes with kids and parents sometimes, and the mothers and fathers will come up to me, like, how did you get him or her to eat the broccoli? They never eat broccoli. Because we started out in the garden, we picked the broccoli, and they tasted it raw in the garden, and then they come in, and we cook it together, and they're vested in it, and they're excited about it, and then all of a sudden, they don't even think about it. It's an icky green vegetable, they've associated something with it in their life, and it really makes them want to eat the stuff. So even if you start, for me as a kid, we started with planting the tomato seeds in the window in our apartment in Queens.
You did?
Yeah, in an old milk, remember the milk cartons?
That.
So we used to cut the milk cartons and my mom would each give us a package of seeds and we'd have our own tomato plants. And then we had a summer house in Connecticut and we'd take those tomato half milk carton things and the tomato plants would be about, I don't know, 6-7 inches tall. And we'd take them up to Goshen, Connecticut where they had the summer house and then we'd plant them.
Oh, I love that
story. No wonder I love tomatoes so much.
I know.
Right, but don't you think that's the way to get the kids to eat broccoli and peas and...
Never
my
mind.
Mom couldn't keep
that's
us out
the way
of the
to
garden.
Get, that's the way to get me.
You have to eat that, right?
That's the way to get me to start my tomato plants. I
right?
should do exactly what you just described.
Yeah, it's an amazing way to do it.
Because we all go out and we spend all that money on those containers to plant the seeds. We could be using milk cartons.
Yeah.
All right, Chris. Thank you so much for starting us off. So stay with us. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. This will be quick in just 90 seconds. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. Don't go away.
Cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight.
Beans.
Cornbread said, now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. Beans.
I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at noon. Discover our great guest and topic lineup and join the conversation with us and other listeners on Facebook, where you'll find our recipes too. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, Gina Matruda, Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, producer Jonathan McNichol, and senior producer Lori Mack. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to make our eaters happy on this edition, whether you love meat or you love to go meatless. So when it comes to meat and grills, one of the best sources out there are the Texans, who can cook Texas style or across the border Mexican style. Rob Walsh is one of our go-to guys for all things Tex-Mex. We're going to give you ideas and explore Rob's cookbook, the Tex-Mex Grill and Backyard Barbacoa Cookbook. Rob Walsh is former food critic for the Houston Press. He's author of 5 cookbooks and a 2-time James Beard Award winner. That's like the Hall of Fame for cookbooks. Rob, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Hey, nice to be here.
I thought what we would do is start out with what you start out with at the beginning of the book. You tell us how to make these blends and rubs and sauces that come up in your recipes. You know, let's say how these work. And I always love these because they add flavor without calories when you do rubs and blends like this.
You know, the thing about rubs, most people, including myself, got used to just buying rubs. You know, there's so many of them in the store and they have such neat packages. But then you start reading the ingredient list and you realize, A, you're probably getting some MSG in there. and B, you're paying quite a bit of money for, you know, some salt and pepper and cayenne. So if you grill a lot, after a while, it makes a lot of sense to start making your own rubs.
Exactly. It's a lot cheaper and it tastes better. So let's quickly run through your Tex-Mex grill blend, because this is a standard in a lot of the recipes. This is an all-purpose grill seasoning that works on just about anything.
Right. And it's just sea salt, some powdered chili. You know, you can use chili powder, but what I found is if you take dried chilies and you bake them a little bit in the oven to get them really dry, and you throw them in a spice grinder, I have, you know, it's my backup coffee grinder, you get a really fresh, bright-tasting chili powder that really brightens up a rub. So the Tex-Mex grill blend is sea salt, powdered chili, granulated garlic, black pepper, thyme, coriander, and cumin. The coriander is one of those really wonderful big spices that the typical spice mix on the grocery store shelf is not going to include because it's expensive. So that's just a really nice all-purpose grill rub, and it tastes sort of like chili powder, only a whole lot better.
And so when we get to some of the recipes, the time goes so quickly, but I don't know how many we'll get to, but that's one to have on board because it can go with just about anything. Here's one that's specifically terrific for pork, and I hope I'm pronouncing, is it Tejano, right?
Right, and Tejano is just the word for Tex-Mex in Spanish. So.
Yeah, a Tejano pork rub or a Tex-Mex pork rub.
You know, you're pretty close to the same ingredient list. You've got garlic powder, sea salt, black pepper, some powdered ancho chili, some thyme, and some oregano.
Brown sugar.
But to this one, you add some brown sugar because pork really benefits from a little bit of sweetness.
You call for Mexican oregano.
Right.
And we can, I mean, you've got some sources in the back of the book, but you can also, just about any place now has Latin markets around, and you'll find Mexican oregano right there.
Right, and it's a different spice from Greek oregano, you know. And I remember I asked the Mexican guy one time, "Well, what's the difference? Why do you use Mexican oregano all the time?" And he said, "Well, because it grows wild down by the river."
You know,
it's just one of those things.
I wish it grew wild next to my river. I'll tell you.
Yeah, I know. I hear you.
Then there's a red rub, which is great for chicken or game birds.
Right, and here we've sort of borrowed from Texas Lebanese, who, along with the chili and the garlic, like to put some cinnamon onto their grilled birds. Mm. I mean, you find that in Middle Eastern grilling quite a bit, that you'll find cinnamon in with the savory spices in a rub for grilling quail or chicken or what have you.
You could use it on shrimp, too. All right, so coming up on the show, the Meat Lovers Meatless Cookbook. Right now we've got Rob Walsh, who's creator of the Tex-Mex Grill and Backyard Barbacoa Cookbook, which is out in paperback. Also in this section, I was thinking we should move on to recipes, but there's the Perini Ranch Ribeye Rub, so that's great, as you might guess, for those ribeye steaks. There's a coffee chipotle barbecue sauce, a Tex Maui barbecue sauce, an ancho root beer barbecue sauce, which is, you know, terrific. I want to pause, well, I guess I better not, just to get to a recipe, because I wanted to do your watermelon margarita. It's my favorite margarita,
yeah,
with fresh watermelon in it. You know, so it's watermelon, simple syrup, which is sugar and water melted together, and some fresh squeezed lemon juice, some fresh squeezed lime juice, gold tequila. You could use fresh watermelon, or as you do, watermelon liqueur, and some mint leaves. That's how all that comes together. So,
yeah, and one of the things I love about that is you can cut up ice cube-sized watermelon pieces and freeze them.
That's what we do. And then when you throw them in, they're frozen, and so it adds to the coldness of the thing.
Yeah, right, without diluting it.
Can we do, you've got a Tex-Mex fajita marinade with these flat iron fajitas. So what's the marinade, this Tex-Mex fajita marinade?
You know, this is the standard marinade in almost every Tex-Mex restaurant, and it's basically half soy sauce, half pineapple juice with lime juice and garlic added. That's really all there is to it. And It's the stuff they paint on the fajitas when they come off the grill, and it's also the stuff they soak them in before they go on the grill. So.
Yeah, and so you put that on your flat iron steaks. You can also use beef chuck or top blade roast, and these are inexpensive cuts, so it's terrific. They have lots of flavor. I guess the trick is you use one of those resealable plastic bags, and you put in the marinade, right?
That's right. And you put the whole thing in the fridge. And
with the meat.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, you don't have to go too long, because if you have a very acidic, marinade, you don't need to wait that. You don't need to leave it that long on the meat. So.
And so you've got to fire up the grill. And I know you like to use mesquite, and some people can get that. And so you put that meat right on the hot part of the grill.
You do, because you're grilling it fast, and if you're, especially something like flat iron steaks, if you marinate it a little bit and cut it really thin on the bias, you don't have to cook the living you know what out of it. So you just want to do it quick, and you want to slice it thin, and you get a beautiful fajita out of it. But basically, you know, what happened was the old outside skirt steak that we loved for so many years got included in a treaty with the Japanese, and 90% of our outside skirt goes to Japan and Korea now. So we're all having to improvise, and we're learning how to make fajitas with flat iron steaks and all kinds of other cuts.
Isn't that wild that
yeah.
happened? Well, there's so much. I mean, that's happening with our wine. That's happening with some of our best fruit. You know, it's all going to the country that pays the most for it, and that happens to be the Japanese. So when you're done with this, taking it off the grill and you slice it against the grain, then you just squeeze lime juice over it, which is a part that I love, and wrap it in a warm flour tortilla, and you can throw in all your fajita fixins, which could be, what? Well, you got a list here. Guacamole, the refried beans if you want, onions and fresh cilantro. You could do grilled onions, peppers, salsa, even lime quarters that you've put on the grill. Or you could put olives. You can kind of do whatever you want.
Yeah, grilled jalapenos is a nice one, too. As long as you got the grill going, if you throw some fresh peppers on there, they get really nice and mellow, and you put a little oil on the outside, and they're just delicious. Onion and cilantro with lime juice mix that's the good old taco truck standby that they put on everything when you eat at a taco truck. And you may have noticed in the Tex-Mex Grill there's some taco truck recipes. So
yeah.
we're borrowing heavily from our taquero friends on the taco truck.
You know, I'm the type, if you put lime juice and cilantro on a shoe, I would eat it. It's one of my favorite combinations. Coming up on the show, we have the Meat Lover's Meatless Cookbook. At this moment, though, we have Rob Walsh, and he's creator of the Tex-Mex Grill and Backyard Barbacoa Cookbook in paperback. So we've got something for everybody, the meat eaters and the non-meat eaters. Let's do this sauce. This is the original chimichurri sauce of Argentina, where they eat this with grilled meats of all kinds. And you've substituted here cilantro and lime juice for what they would usually use, which is parsley and red wine vinegar.
Exactly.
So
it comes out just wonderful. I mean, you know, you've got the same oil there, but it's just a delicious marinade. And I used it for this Tex-Mex churrasco, where, you know, you take a filet mignon and basically butterfly it twice and get super thin sheets of tenderloin and then grill them really fast and chop them up and serve them with that chimichurri sauce.
Oh, which is fresh cilantro, garlic minced up, some olive oil, some freshly squeezed lime juice, some minced red onion, ground black pepper, sea salt, and again, that dried Mexican oregano. And you just pulse it in the blender. Hey, here's the question, though. If I can't find that Mexican oregano, can I use the regular oregano, or will it really just not be as good?
You can use Mexican oregano. You can use, you can use coriander.
You can
mix and match, substitute, you know. But coriander, you know, which is the seed of the cilantro plant, ought to be a favorite of yours, too, I should imagine.
Yeah, but it doesn't have that fresh feeling.
Yeah, it does. That's true.
Stuffed peppers are fantastic on the grill.
They are. I never thought of it until I started. You know, here in Houston, we have a lot of Middle Eastern kebabs, and my wife just loves the kebabs. And you know, she's kind of lukewarm about regular old ground meat and hamburgers. So I started putting the kebab seasoning in ground meat, and then I started cutting it with lamb and cutting it with pork and really, you know, making some spicy kind of fillings and putting them in stuffed peppers. Well, I discovered if as long as you don't overfill the pepper too much, you can just put the whole thing on the grill, and that just makes it, you know, all the better. It's an amazing flavor.
So you stuff it with this what we're going to discuss, and then grill the bottom side, and then you flip the whole thing over stuffed.
Right.
And grill the other side, which is great.
So you've got a nice soft roasted pepper, and you slow cook the inside of the pepper, and then you turn it over and get a nice crunchy surface on the outside of the meat.
Oh, that sounds so good. So here, you can use the seasoning blend of your choice. At the beginning of our conversation, you heard us talking about various seasoning blends, but you can use any one that you like. If it has salt in it, you can eliminate the salt that's in this recipe. You've got a little bit of white wine in there. You can use breakfast sausage meat, but I know you, Rob, use venison sausage.
Yeah, that's because I have a whole lot of it in the freezer.
You're lucky. And then you have ground beef also. You mix those together.
Right.
Cooked rice, of course, is standard to stuffed peppers. Minced up garlic, a beaten egg, fresh parsley, a little bit of cayenne pepper because Rob likes a little bit of heat and everything. He's got that ground cumin, some oil for frying, and three small green bell peppers. It's a little oil in the frying pan. And then you can adjust. You throw the meat in, you taste it, you see if I got enough of the right kind of seasoning in that. So it just takes a second to do that because this is really, the main cooking is going to be on the grill for this thing.
Right. I've just found that if you fry a little bit, I mean, whether you're making chorizo or breakfast sausage or whatever you're making, it's so easy to get. What I usually do is under-season it. It's just amazing how much seasoning you want to put in a sausage or a kebab or a stuffed pepper like this. So, you know, I usually find the first time I taste it that I've been a little timid and I can go ahead and put a little more seasoning in it.
What peppers do you use? Just traditional green bell peppers, right?
Right. For this one, I usually use traditional green stuffed peppers, but I'll tell you what I do a lot of times is if I have a lot of the meat mixture, I'll also stuff some poblanos or some jalapenos, and then they're just done at different times. You know, I mean, you can take this delicious stuffed pepper mixed stuffing, and put it in a jalapeno or put it in a poblano, and cook it. A little shorter time period, and then you can use those stuffed jalapenos for appetizers.
Yeah, it's like little poppers, right?
Right, instead of main dishes. So.
We've got a couple minutes left, so I thought I'd kind of, you know, toss you a curveball and go straight to something that's almost like dessert. And this is chili grilled pineapple. How about that?
Yeah.
So how does this work? You've got some teaspoons of powdered red chili and slices of fresh pineapple. And a little bit of cooking spray. This is on page 208 if you're scrambling through your book right now.
Yeah, it's a pretty easy recipe, and I've been doing that one a long time, so I don't need to scramble too much. You definitely want to start with a fresh pineapple. It doesn't really do anything for canned pineapple rings. But I started eating this grilled pineapple in the Caribbean. They serve it all the time with grilled fish and grilled pork and all sorts of stuff.
I know, but I do grilled pineapple. I never thought to put this chili powder on it.
Partly where I got that was from, you know, you go to Mexico and you get a mango and they put chili powder all over the mango. You know, I mean, it's just chili powder is just almost always eaten with sweet tropical fruit.
And we're talking about on the grill. This is lightly browned. This is 3 minutes per side. You can just eat it as a side dish with grilled pork, lamb, or sausage. You can eat it for dessert with ice cream or cake or whatever. Rob, it has been a treat to talk to you. I hope you'll come back on the show.
Oh, I can't wait.
We've been talking with Rob Walsh, creator of the Tex-Mex Grill and Backyard Barbacoa Cookbook, which is out in paperback. Coming up, we have the Meat Lovers Meatless Cookbook. We'll be right back in 90 seconds.
I am sitting in the morning at the diner on the corner. I am waiting at the counter for the man to pour the coffee. And he fills it only halfway. And before I even argue, he is looking out the window at somebody coming in. It is always nice to see you, says the man behind the counter to the woman who has come in. She is shaking her umbrella, and I look the other way as they're kissing their hellos, and I'm pretending not to see them. Instead, I pour the milk. I open up the paper. There's a story of an actor who had died while he was drinking. It was no one I had heard of. And I'm turning to the horoscope, looking for the funnies, when I'm feeling someone's watching me. And so I raise my head back a bit.
I'm Faith Middleton, and this is the Food Schmooze Party, coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Follow us on Twitter at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR. When you have a meat lover in the crowd who has sworn off meat for health or ethical reasons, how do you make that person happy? Well, we searched high and low and discovered this: The Meat Lover's Meatless Cookbook by Kim O'Donnell. She has recipes for every season and ideas for packing powerful flavors into her dishes. That's how she does it. That's how she makes the meat lover feel pretty satisfied. And if you're the ultra-vegetarian, meaning a vegan who eats no dairy on top of that, there are even recipes for you in the book. Kim O'Donnell is a trained chef, cooking school grad, and freelance writer online and for The Washington Post and Real Simple, among others. Kim, welcome to the Food Schmooze.
Thanks so much for having me, Faith.
Brilliant title on this
Thank
book.
You.
You probably came up with this title because you've had that experience where you've got people who've been used to being carnivores and chewing on meat, and for whatever reason, they're now meatless. And you must have had to settle that question of, how am I going to make these people happy?
I'm one of those people, so I can completely relate. So I am working from this same level on the countertop, so to speak. And all I kept thinking about when I was developing recipes and testing them was, does this make me want to lick my chops? You know, that whole sort of idea that the flavor and the experience has to be in the mouth, umami, that full-on experience, just like when you tear into a roast chicken.
Yeah, because part of it is, I know with me and with meat, part of it is chew.
Mm-hmm.
I have to feel like I've got that, not all the time, but that chew. Because if you're eating fish, you don't have quite the chew as you do with beef. But there's there's something about it. So if I don't have chew, then I've got to have powerful flavors. And I think that's that combination you've come up with here.
I feel really good about the food in this book. And for me, it wasn't just about putting together a beautiful plate of vegetables and calling it a day. It had to be much more than that. And, you know, I'm really thrilled because most of the recipe testers that came on board are all meat eaters. So this passed this standard of deliciousness for folks who are just getting the hang of this way of eating. So I'm putting my stamp of approval on the food. It's not just gratuitous veggies, you know, just to get them in and say we've done it.
Right. Veggies and hummus. Lots of times when a vegetarian comes over and you're not used to it, they will all say to me privately, I am so sick of going to people's houses where they stick either a bowl of pasta in front of me or some veggies and hummus and say, there you go, vegetarian.
Right. Or it's a supper of sides, you know.
All right. Let's get to it because this is kind of fun. Now, we're going to talk about something here that if you're not used to vegetarian eating, you know, we've become much more vegetarian-based at our house just for health reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so we like what you do. We like these powerful flavors. And we've found that you can really punch things up and you don't even miss the meat. So here's a great way that you've done it. And we're going to be talking about something here, and some people will be new to this. It's tempeh.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to tell us what that is. But here's the recipe. Jerk tempeh with a zesty pineapple salad and Jamaican-style peas and rice. So she's gone straight ethnic here. You've got that kind of Caribbean feel to this.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about tempeh, which you can now get even in the supermarket, not just in health food stores. Tell us about tempeh, and then we'll kind of walk through these recipes.
Most people, when they think of soybeans, they think of tofu. Whether or not they've ever tried it, they've probably heard the word tofu. Tempeh is actually, it's a cousin, I would call it. It's also made from soybeans, where tofu is actually soybeans that are made into taking the milk and making a curd and more cheese-like. Tempeh is using whole soybeans that get fermented, and they are formed into a patty, if you will, or a cake. Now, don't think like chocolate layer cake. Think something a lot thinner. And most of the time when you would find it in the supermarket, it would look like a rectangle.
Yeah.
And probably about an inch thick.
And it's dense.
It is dense. And at first glance, you might say, whoa, what are you doing to me here? You know, it's kind of gray and little brown and
right.
You take
it out of the package. I remember the first time I did that, I thought, what the heck is this?
Exactly.
You know, so like tofu, it's neutral, kind
it's
of.
It's neutral and it's toothy, which is what I love about tempeh.
Yeah.
You know, you marinate it, and that's what I recommend in all the tempeh. I have about 3 tempeh recipes in the book, and I highly recommend that, you know, you do marinate the tempeh. You know, it's a chameleon. Then pan fry it or bake it.
Yeah,
and
get that
put
crispy.
On something that really kapows it up, but it's that texture that is, you know, what you're talking about. You want the chew. Well, you get a little bit of that chew with the tempeh. But, you know, what I would say to folks is if you're expecting it to mimic meat, then this is not for you. But if you're looking for something that is fully flavored and extremely high in protein, so you're going to get that bit, this is an interesting alternative. It's
so,
not a fake meat.
Yeah.
You know, like you see that, you know, soy sausage and chorizo and all those other kinds of things.
As we both know, it all comes down to this. Is it delicious?
Exactly.
So
I think so.
We gave meat lovers a treat in our last segment. And in this one, Kim O'Donnell is here, author of the paperback cookbook, The Meat Lovers Meatless Cookbook. And we're walking through her jerk tempeh with a zesty pineapple salad and Jamaican-style peas and rice. Let me say what the ingredients are. And then you tell us quickly how this comes together because we want to make time for the zesty pineapple salad. So the ingredients are you go out to the supermarket and you buy an 8-ounce package of tempeh. It's spelled T-E-M-P-E-H. Then you get a half a cup of prepared jerk sauce. And you can find these in the aisle that has all the condiments in it or wherever you get your favorite jerk sauce. You want the real sauce, not the marinade or the rub, right? Mm-hmm. And then all you need is a little cooking spray or vegetable oil. So we're talking here about something that is really low in fat, high in protein, has got that toothy quality, and I think a lot of people agree is pretty healthy for you. Now tell us, because you've got this block of stuff and you might look at it and say, ooh, I don't know what to do with this. Mm-hmm. Tell us how this comes together.
So you've got this rectangular thing, and what I like to do is cut it into like the size of your thumb, so like 2-inch long pieces, about a 1/2 inch wide, and you'll probably end up with about 2 dozen of those pieces. And I like to take about a 1/2 cup of the jerk sauce, slather up the tempeh in the sauce.
Put the tempeh in a mixing bowl, right? And then you
add
the jerk sauce, and
yes,
you stir it up so that it's all coated, right?
Exactly.
And you let it sit there for about a 1/2 hour.
Yeah, okay. More or less. And you can be forgiving.
And then in the meantime, the oven's on. Then you put your pieces, you line them up in a single layer into your little baking dish.
Yep. And bake at about 350. You know, while that's happening, you can get going on the other stuff. You'll want to perhaps get your peas and rice going the tempeh is going.
Oh, yes. But you know what? Then not until we do this zesty pineapple salad, because this is my favorite part of this whole thing. So think about this. You've got this tempeh with this jerk sauce on it, and you want something that's going to match that in this sort of Jamaican style. So we've got this zesty pineapple salad. Listen to these things coming together. You've got this pineapple that's cut into chunks. You've got some diced fresh cilantro in it. You've got some unsalted peanuts. You've got the zest of a lime, a little bit of brown sugar, because that's what's going to make it caramelize, a touch of soy sauce to play against the sugar, and then this little secret thing that gives it that zip, and that's a little bit of chili pepper. It's really the chili pepper of your choice. You can choose whatever kind you want. So tell us how you make the zesty pineapple salad.
This is one of those salads that really delivers. And you know, it's sort of like, how can something so simple be so tongue popping? And that's kind of how I always think that of those two words when I make this salad, because, you know, you're just, you know, chopping up a few little things, mixing them all. It's literally a one bowl affair. You know, once you've got your pineapple chopped, the idea here is that throw it into a bowl, toss it up. You don't have to worry about putting stuff into a separate thing and then adding it to the big bowl. Just get it going, toss with your hands or with a wooden spoon, and let it sit. Just kind of like let it macerate.
So it's the pineapple chunks in this bowl. Mm-hmm. You add that fresh cilantro. You chopped up peanuts, lime zest, and the chili pepper, if you're using it. Some people don't like hot stuff.
Right.
Okay, and then in another small bowl, what do you do?
You've got your lime juice, your brown sugar, your soy sauce, and you want to just make sure that the sugar is dissolved.
So you stir it.
Yeah, and that's just to make sure that, you know, it doesn't end up in a clump in, you know, the end result. And then just pour that over the pineapple with a big spoon and stir to combine. And then you've got your fruit coated with this little ad hoc dressing that you've just made.
So can you imagine, you've got this great jerk tempeh thing going on, and then on the side, you've got this zesty pineapple salad with the nuts and the fresh cilantro and the chili peppers in it. You can even make this zesty pineapple salad a day ahead so that all those flavors meld together. If you're just joining us, we know new people are joining the show. In our last segment, we did something for the meat lovers, the traditional meat lovers. And in this one, we've got Kim O'Donnell, because we were searching around for a book where if you were a carnivore, and for whatever reason you've had to switch over, who's doing a book that would make you feel like you're not going to miss that meat thing? And so this is a book that is called The Meat Lover's Meatless Cookbook, and we think she's done a great job. Also a recipe here for Jamaican-style peas and rice, and I'll just let you know that that's in the book. So a lot of times people say, when they're eating this sort of vegetarian-based thing, well, how can I have crab cakes? Because then maybe they're not eating traditional fish. And so you have figured out a way to do these crab cakes with, and this is going to sound odd, with chickpeas as the base for them. And, but there's this yogurt remoulade sauce that goes with them, a cocktail sauce, and then this corn kernel salad. Now, I don't know how far we're going to get, so I want you to know that the, some of the recipes that I hope that we would get to is the tofu barbecue with these true blue baked beans and a vinegar slaw. I wish we could do that one. Also, zucchini and corn-studded orzo with a goat cheesy roasted pepper. So you can see these very flavor-packed things that she has done. Maybe we can get to those. We've got about 5 minutes left. Let's do as quickly as we can how you used chickpeas, of all things, to make these quote-unquote crab cakes.
It all kind of started, I was developing my take on falafel, which is traditionally deep fried, and I came up with a patty that you pan fry so that it doesn't end up being hard and dry on the inside. And, you know, terrific flavor. And while I kept testing them over and over again, my husband, you know, would have like falafel patties day in, day out. And there was one day when he kind of looked at it and said, "This looks like a crab cake." And it was just one of those eureka moments in the kitchen. We had been living in Washington, D.C. for many years. So crab cakes, you know, are a local thing. It's, you know, if you were going to associate anything with the Chesapeake Bay, that would be one of the things. And so I got to work on that because the chickpeas, it's an interesting recipe. This is a variation on the falafel patty I was just mentioning. And the way that these come together is you soak dried chickpeas for, you know, about 6 hours. And then instead of cooking them like you think you might, you pulverize them in the food processor. And your batter comes together in the food processor with onions and all the other flavorings. So I just looked
You can't skip over those flavorings. Wait a minute. Because these flavorings, I can tell you worked on these because this has a couple of secret things that the second you hear them, you're going to say, that's why this reminds you of real crab cakes. So it's the chickpeas.
You can
soak them the day before, know, or in the morning
absolutely.
For the nighttime. So you've got the chickpeas, some chopped onion, some cloves of garlic that you've crushed, some fresh cilantro or parsley, some baking powder. And here we go. Here are the three things. Old Bay seasoning, cayenne, and dry mustard. And then these are going to end up on a hamburger buns or an English muffins.
Yeah.
And you've got pepper and salt. But those three key ingredients, the Old Bay seasoning, the cayenne, and the dry mustard, are what give these kind of neutral chickpeas that real feeling of crab cakes.
Yeah, I mean, because you're going to get, when you pan fry them, you're getting that lovely crust on the outside, which is something that you associate with crab cakes. And then it's soft on the inside. And, you know, tucked in between a bun with the cocktail sauce or the remoulade, the yogurt remoulade, it really feels crab shacky. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, the yogurt remoulade is plain yogurt, parsley, Dijon mustard, fresh lemon juice, some either bread and butter pickles or cornichon, your favorite hot sauce, some onions diced up or shallots, and some salt. And that all goes together quickly into a mixing bowl. And you've got this dipping sauce. You also give the option of a cocktail sauce, which is ketchup, horseradish, lemon juice, cayenne, and salt. There's always a little bit of heat. I wish we had time, Kim, to go through so many of the terrific recipes in your book. I appreciate you being with us on the Food Schmooze Party. Thanks, and I hope you'll come back again.
I'd love to cook with you, Faith. We should think about that.
All right, that's a deal. Kim O'Donnell, who is author of The Meat Lover's Meatless Cookbook in Paperback. The Food Schmooze airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us and other listeners and find our recipes on Facebook. Just search The Faith Middleton Show. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.